You've done a lot of things in your life, and I don't have time to name them all, but you were a participant in Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government for 2 years as a lecturer at both the Kennedy School and Harvard Law on Native constitutional reform.
Yes, after the constitutional era, and especially after the Constitution itself, and I remarked that the convention ended in 99, but it was not voted on by the people until 03 and ratified. And then the federal government took another 3 years to say, trying to fight us from it becoming the law of the land. Law schools would contact me and they would say things like, you're the only chairman of a tribal constitutional convention in modern times, and would you come and talk with us about it? So I started writing law journal articles, and I'm not a lawyer, but Arizona State University, Federal Bar Association. It was while I was speaking at the Federal Bar Association about modern constitutional reform that a young man came up and he said, I've come here from Harvard to meet you. And he said, we want to invite you to come to Harvard. And he said, here's my card. I know you're busy, but if you'll call me. And what I discovered is that the Kennedy School was, in fact, assembling a program to help Native governments to transition from federally controlled constitutional governments into governments of their own, and grappling with serious issues, per capita payments, blood quantum. Oh my gosh, there's just a litany of modern challenges to Indian country of the 500 federally recognized tribes that are here. So I thought, well, I'm a curious man, John. I thought, well, I'll go there and see if they actually put their pants on the way that we do. And sure enough, they really did. And I've worked with tribes from the northern part of the United States, the Lummi on Bellingham Peninsula in Washington. They had a representative there. He said, come meet with our elders and tell them this will be all right. He said, we're very elder-driven. And I flew to meet with the Lummi Elder Council in this ginormous tribal council hall with these gigantic cedar poles, and they had gill-netted salmon that day and cedar plank, and I've talked with their elders about this is a needed evolution. Your tribe, in many ways, while holding on to tradition, has also evolved to continue to be a tribe. That's our greatest challenge, is how do we continue to be tribal and not stuck in an era where we will be disestablished or will be no longer recognizable?
But at Harvard, you were the expert.
Well, I was only expert because I was the only one there that had done it.
Yes.
Doesn't make you an expert.
They were learning from you.
Well, I was sharing with them what we had done. And I would tell you, John, it wasn't me. You see, I was a part of a village to the constitutional process. Ralph Keene is a young attorney who is in an office in Stillwell, Oklahoma right now. And his father was on the Cherokee Judiciary Tribunal under the 75 Constitution. And he was vice chairman of the Constitutional Convention Commission. And yes, there was Charlie Gord. And yes, there was Luella Kuhn from East Peavine in Adair County, who was like the second employee of the Cherokee Nation under W.W. Keeler when it reformed. These are all people that I got to sit in rooms with and talk to and hear their thoughts on how we would be about these things. So I was really just a voice, that's all, just a voice.
This is more about Harvard. Was it a nice experience, environment, and there? And I suppose
I loved it there. I was very pleased that there in the Commons there's a plaque on the wall of one of the buildings, and it commemorates the fact that Caleb Chismakha of the Wampanoags was their first Native American graduate in 1665. There are two schools back east, John, that have in their charters an obligation to educate Indian children, as at Harvard and at Dartmouth. Yeah. Well, my man killer was later on the advisory board at Dartmouth, and I spent some time walking the halls of Harvard and found them to be very convivial because they recognized that there was a new resurgence of governance happening inside of Indian country. And for me, I was just a boy from Maynard County that was a practitioner. They wanted me to stay. They said, hey, get another master's degree, and we'll write books, and we'll do things. But much like Gene Reinbold and his call from Wilma Mankiller, I was, well, am I going to be, you know, a Harvard guy, or am I going to be a banker? And I'm from Maynard County.
When you spoke to the Harvard people in Cherokee, I suppose they just sat up and really took notice.
Well, remember, you know, if you're speaking to non-speakers, it's fine. During a recent 30-hour Cherokee language class, I discovered that, even my Cherokee is probably equivalent to maybe a three-year-old. But
what about the preservation of the Osage language and the younger generation? When the current chief or whatever, aren't you having classes and teaching the young ones?
The Osages are, but I would tell you, among the Cherokee, though, yeah. We have.
Did not, I say Osage?
You did, but
I'm
that's
sorry.
Okay.
I didn't mean to do that.
I will say that we used to shoot at them recreationally at one point, but after all, they did get that part of our treated land in 1835. It had all the oil in it, but okay. We kept all of the ticks and the copperheads.
Well, my mistake, but
no, that's
what
quite
I learned,
all right.
I learned here.
Well, there you have it. Yes. As a matter of fact, our current administration has just invested over $20 million in the Freeling, named for one of our great fluent speakers and a teacher, the Freeling Language Center. Just a month ago, 40 of my fellow Cherokee citizens here in Oklahoma City, we spent 30 hours of instruction in language. We spent a weekend at the First Americans Museum from 8 to 5 on a Saturday and Sunday, where we, in sessions, we spoke only Cherokee. And that's challenging when your Cherokee instructors will ask you questions in Cherokee, then you're supposed to respond. I cheated, though, being a 2.5-year-old, you know, quality speaker from my grandparents, I could always look at my instructors and go, Galisi Niwi, which they would laugh because Cherokee, it means tell me in English. And they would have to because I'm an elder. You can't say that to an older, you know, our language is very culturally designed as well. There's things you can say to elders and things that you cannot to be disrespectful. So being the second oldest student in that class, I was able to say Galisi Niwi, and they had to say it in English. And then other students in the class would go, well, what did he say to you? And they go, well, he said, I had to say this in English, and, you know, I have to do that.
Did you ever, have you taught history? I mean, this has been a history lesson with you. And you must have taught many classes. You could have been a history professor.
I have delivered history talks, either here at the Oklahoma Historical Society or various, I've been on museum boards. And as a matter of fact, John, I'm going in less than 2 weeks to deliver a presentation in Tahlequah to the Tribal's Historic Preservation Group on Sam Houston living among the Cherokees, because I am a Mason. I am a member of the Masonic Lodge in Tahlequah, which is the oldest Masonic lodge in the state, founded in the 1840s. My great-great-grandfather was the lodge secretary, and we have Sam Houston's sword there that was given to Chief Bowl of the Cherokees during the Texas Revolution, and it made its way back to Tahlequah. And it, to my knowledge, it's never been out of the Masonic Lodge. So when the tribal preservation officer of the tribe says, Mr. Hanna, do you know about this sword? And I said, I can get that sword brought out of the lodge into a program. So the lodge secretary is going to take the Sam Houston sword, and I'm going to give a talk on Sam Houston in his 3 or 4 years living among the Cherokee.
Well, how interesting that would be.
I'm an armchair historian, John, not a teacher. I'm just an armchair guy.
Yes. You served in a Civil War living history unit?
Yeah, well, my economic resources in going to college were not, you know, as great as they should have been. Yes, Nyla Phipps, that high school English teacher, was right. I did get a scholarship, but it was a Regents scholarship, and it didn't pay for everything. So I had to have summer jobs. And my freshman year summer job, I worked for the White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad in Skagway, Alaska, and made a lot of money. So much so, I didn't have to do work study. I paid for my college and had a great time. And I was planning on just repeating that process my sophomore summer. Unfortunately, the railroad was having a strike, and a friend of my parents was an educator and an archaeologist at the University of Arkansas. You know, you grow up over near the Arkansas line, and you'll know people on both sides. He asked my dad, he said, "What's Jay doing this summer?" He said, "Well, he was going back to Alaska to work on the railroad, make money to go to college." And he said, "Well," he said, "we've just had a slot open at the National Park in Hot Springs." And he said, "You know, I think he might be well suited for that." Once again, you know, somebody suggesting to me I do something. After that, I spent 5 summers as a National Park Ranger in the National Park Service. And during that time, of course, having an interest in American Civil War, I fell in with a group of National Park Service reenactors. We go to Jefferson Barracks, and I actually enjoyed camp life better than all of the drilling with 8 caliber muskets and wool uniforms. I like cooking on campfire and Dutch oven cooking and taking naps in tents. I did that interpretation quite well.
But you've talked about being a guitar picker.
Yes.
Tell us, has your band fronted anybody? Come on after somebody? Are you that professional that you could actually perform in that manner?
Well, we're not professional by any stream. We were founded on October the 15th of 1983 for the opening of an attorney friend who had restored a 1930s roadhouse, and he said, "Well, we'll need a name for your group." I just picked up some local guys, and at that time I was president of the bank in Guthrie, and there at the Guthrie exit there was a hand-painted billboard of a man who had an embryo transfer laboratory. For those that might listen, they can research and find out about bovine embryo, transfers. And I thought, you know, that it was such a gaudy sign. It was huge. And I thought, well, what a great name for a faux country western group than Billy Bob Bovine and the Embryo Transfer. And so we performed there. And the next thing you know, people said, "Well, you know, it's kind of a cool group you've got. Could you just keep these people together?" And band members have come and they have gone, and some have died, and some have probably gone to jail if the truth were known. But there's a core group of us that have been together throughout this entire time, when we have appeared in 3 movies. When Willie Nelson closed for us on 2 occasions, a lot of people thought that we opened for him. But I believe, John, that people are oftentimes looking in the wrong end of the telescope. But when Gene Reinbolt turned 90, I foolishly asked him, I said, "Gene, how are you going to celebrate your 90th birthday?" And he said, "Well, you know, Jay, I'm glad you asked." He said, "I'd like to have a big birthday party, and I like Willie Nelson music, and I want him to come and perform. And we're going to charge people about $500 a head to come." I said, "To your birthday party?" He said, "Yes, because we're going to donate that money to the OU Stevens Cancer Center." And he said, "It'll be a big deal, and we'll have fun." So I had to be a part of the negotiation of getting Willie Nelson to perform at a private birthday party, which I will tell you, he did not want to do. But there is a possibility, and I think the time has now run past the statute of limitations, that I was the chairman of the board of all gaming operations of Cherokee Nation, and I finally told Mr. Nelson's manager, I said, "You people play at Indian casinos, don't you?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Where are you performing before this particular day?" He said, "Well, we're going to be in Kansas City." And I said, "Well, if you come west and you start south," I said, "there is an Indian casino up near Shalako." And I said, "They may want to hire you for a show." And then the Chickasaws own a casino that's down near the Texas border. And he said, "Well, yeah, we're going on back to Texas." And I said, "You know, in between those 2 Indian casinos is Oklahoma City. And maybe you could do a 1-hour show for a birthday party." And, of course, they charged for it. Mr. Rainbow paid for it. He paid for everything out of his pocket. But every dime that got raised in that went to Stevenson. They said, well, we need an opener. We need an opening group. And I said, well, we're not going to charge at all. And so my group opened for Willie Nelson, although we tell people that he closed for us. And then when H.E. turned 95, did the same thing. Only that time it was Western, cowboy Heritage Center here, and we filled up the entire great ballroom at that. And we played a lot longer than Willie did. And yeah, I've been on the bus, but we did not inhale. We did not.
Was Willie fun to be around, or was he just...
I will tell you true that he's a lot shorter than I thought he was going to be. And, of course, I'm just hired help. So he was mainly, the photographs are phenomenal. Robert Henry, a good friend, they're all armed up. And I think if we went to Robert's home, he's living upstate of Washington now, he probably has that picture of himself with Willie Nelson armed up, probably hanging over, his fireplace. I didn't bother to have my picture made with Willie Nelson because, after all, he closed for my band.
Yes, he did. But you opened for Hank Thompson.
Well, I had gone on to Telequa to take the presidency of the bank there. Most of the guys in my group were back in in Guthrie. They called me one day and they said the Logan County Free Fair has hired two musicians to do big shows to help raise money to keep the fair going. And they've asked, they knew about our band, they said they've asked if we'll open for one of these acts. And I said, well, who are they? And they said, well, Friday night is Lori Morgan. Her husband, Keith Whitley, who, ended his life through alcoholism, was kind of on the rise at that point. I didn't really know her that well, and it was Friday, and I had to work in Tahlequah. I had a real day job. I said, well, who's playing on Saturday night? And he said, well, said some old guy named Hank Thompson. I said, he's still alive? And they said, yes, he is. And I said, you know what? I want to open for Hank. Two reasons. My father, who was a musician, said he'll be impressed. I said, number two, Hank Thompson was married to Merle Travis's current wife, and they lived here in Tahlequah. And I said, that'll just be fun. So drove back to Guthrie for that Saturday show, and back in the green room, I got to tell Hank Thompson, I said, I am from Tahlequah. And he said, well, you must know Dorothy, my ex-wife. And I said, yes, I can't tell you she's a customer of the bank, but I said, I know Dorothy. And he said, well, Merle's dead now, but said when he was alive, said we were husbands in law. And we opened for Hank Thompson that night. And he went into the Country Western Hall of Fame about 2 weeks after that, and we kind of take credit for that.